We're going to go to David and Wasim in a minute. Remember, you can call on 0808 5909 693, also text 85058, email up all night at bbc.co.uk. I want to go to some of those texts because Jeff texted in a long time ago. Fevzi, if we could deal with these two texts pretty quickly. Can you help? Desktop with Vista, always now get a secure connection, failed or can't find server. He's paying over £40 a month for his package. It's driving him nuts. Can you help him out?
Okay, first thing to say about Vista is Microsoft have recently stopped supporting Vista. It's therefore no longer considered to be a safe operating system to use, particularly on a computer that's online, because as security vulnerabilities are discovered, they will no longer be fixed free of charge and as a matter of course. So my first advice to you is it's well past time to move off Vista. It's a particularly poor operating system to start with. Even if your machine won't run Windows 10, you could take that to Windows 7 and have a supported system. Beyond that, for those particular issues, I mean, I'd have to ask, you know, is this happening with particular websites? Is it happening with everything? What has changed? Did you install any software, you know, at the time? Did something change on the system? So we'd have to go through some diagnostic questions, essentially.
But start with getting rid of Vista.
Yeah, well, I would just, as a general principle, it's no longer safe. Same thing happened to Windows XP about 18 months ago. If you want some further help with that, I'd suggest that you can contact me via Twitter at Gadget Detective. I'd be delighted to take you through those questions, but it's a sort of diagnostic process. It's not going to be possible to answer that without more information.
But that seems to be the way forward, Jeff. Get in touch with Fevzi on his Twitter account. And the second one from Dan in Manchester. Hi, Fevzi. Is it possible to rescue data on my phone's corrupted SD card?
Yes, it is. There's a piece of software that you can, well, there's many pieces of software that will help recover data. If the data is there, you've got a chance of recovering. The first advice is don't use that card anymore, because the way it works is when a file is deleted, let's say accidentally deleted, it's not usually physically deleted, just the entry pointing to that file is deleted. It's a bit like having a book and tearing out the index. All the main pages are still there. It's just it's hard to find what you want. But there are programs that can effectively re-index that book and find the data, which is potentially still there. But if you continue to use the card and write new data to it, that in quotes deleted data may be overwritten and then it really is gone. I would suggest you start with a free piece of software called Recuva, which is spelled R-E-C-U-V-A, and you can download that from various places, including a site called filehippo.com. It's a free piece of software. It's quite a good one. It's quite well suited to getting files back off memory cards. So I'd start with that. There are other programs like Get Data Back and so forth, but those are not free. So you could start with that. If it's got particularly valuable data on it, or had valuable data on it, I would recommend backing up that doing a bit by bit backup using something like Acronis, so that even if you mess up that particular card in the effort of getting it back, you can always reinstate it and try again. But it needs to be a bit perfect copy of the memory card.
Fevzi, thanks for that. We're going to go to David and Wasim after the news. Fevzi, I just want to ask you one question. It was something that you talked about before with one of the callers when they were having a problem with their computer turning on, and they said, well, we turned it off and we left it for a few days. Now, we all try and do that, but is there any point in doing that? You know, something doesn't work, we just turn it off and hope that magically, after 2 days, it's going to spring back to life. It's not, is it?
Not normally. I mean, some problems are to do with the machine overheating. So turning it off for a period can help. And that's often a clue as to where the problem comes, because if it's sort of like the problem doesn't occur when you first start using it, but after half an hour it does, then that might suggest a heating problem. It might also suggest that there's some faulty components on the circuit board. But, you know, so switching off and on, I mean, not pulling the plug, but shutting down in orderly fashion, restarting a Windows computer in safe mode, which is a diagnostic mode, can often clear problems. You know, computers, good as they are, do benefit from being reset and just being able to set everything up up again from scratch. And so that can sometimes help, although it's not, there's not usually a benefit of leaving something for days before switching it back on, other than, you know, you may feel calmer about what's happening.
Hope, isn't it? We all need hope in life, I suppose. David in Southampton's been extremely patient. David, thanks for that. Tell Febsy the problem that you need solved.
Oh, hello.
Morning, David.
Good morning.
I've had a problem with Windows Media Player. Everything else works on my laptop, except that you can't see, you've got a little bar at the top that says sync, doesn't it, with MP3 player or something for the music that's already inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't sync with several devices. Does it need new drivers or something, does it?
So
it's 7 years old.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to try and use the latest version of the media player that's still compatible with your machine. I mean, Windows Media Player was removed, for example, as a standard from more recent versions of the operating system. And because of that, increasingly, there are devices that don't support it and won't synchronize with its content. So that can be an issue. Other range of third-party media players that you could go for.
What would you recommend, Febsy? Which has some good ones out there?
I don't think there's, to be honest, there's not any one that I would recommend. It's a case of trying to find one that covers the format of the media that you want. So some of them will support some types of video and audio, and others will not. So, I'll have a think about that, but I'd be loath to say one over the other.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because as you say, some support some aspects of the sort of media you want to play in, and some others support other aspects. So is it about having a combination nowadays?
It can be. It's a question of knowing the format that you want to support, and going at it like that. I mean, I suppose if I were to have only one media player on my system, I suppose it would be one called VLC. And that one has a good range. It doesn't have all the codecs on it, all the different standards supported, but it has most of them. So I suppose if I was having problems with Windows Media Player, I'd download VLC. And also the benefit of that, there's VLC that runs on Windows. There's ones that run on various mobile platforms as well. So you should find it easier to have a sort of a more unified experience across different devices. And it is a more current thing than Windows Media Player. Windows Media Player, as I say, fell away to a large extent because it stopped being a standard media player.
How about the Nero, what was on there? Because I did try to copy a disc with that, and it said no pathway found.
Well, that's to do with the problem with the installation. You might find that, you know, the icon is still there, but the actual program's been deleted or been moved. So when it talks about no pathway found, files and applications are stored on a hard drive in a sort of hierarchical structure of files within files or folders within folders. So it may be looking for the application, the Nero application, in a location where it no longer exists. That's not an issue with the compatibility with certain file types. It's just that the installation is faulty now. If you have the original disk or you can download it again, then you may do that. Nero is, I think there is a free version, but it's also a commercial product that you can pay for, a sort of enhanced version of it. But I guess I would start with VLC as a good place to start. I certainly wouldn't be spending money at this point. See if the free option will do you good. There are some types of things like security software where I would say it's worth paying, you know, for to get a better product because it's key. But for something like a media player, it's a fairly innocuous piece of software, so I would go for VLC, try that, and then consider your options if that doesn't meet all your needs. But I suspect it will. As I say, the range of formats that it supports is relatively good, and it exists in different forms, so you can run it on mobile as well.
Thank you very much for that, Febsy, and I hope that solves your problems. David, Wasim's been extremely patient in Oldham. Wasim, please ask Febsy your question.
Hi, I'm a big fan. Just want to ask, basically, I'm going abroad and I'm taking my smart phone with me.
Yep.
I'm going to turn the roaming off and I'm going to buy a local SIM.
Yeah.
what I want to know is, what's the best phone from about maybe 2-3 years ago I can buy second hand, where I can insert a SIM card and use the Wi-Fi hotspot?
You mean create a Wi-Fi hotspot off that smartphone, off that phone? Use it to create.
What phone can I buy second hand from a few years ago, you know, like about £100 budget, use that abroad?
Yeah, you don't have to buy a phone from a few years ago to do that. There are very cheap Android phones out there that will, you know, up to date. And I think it would be a false economy, because the problem with the older phones, Wasim, is that they won't support the newest operating system. So if they're not already redundant in terms of not being able to support the latest version of, say, Google Android, they soon will be. And the problem is, once that happens, as we've sort of alluded to with, you know, with Vista on Windows, once you get to a point where you can't update the operating system anymore, the device becomes insecure. So you certainly wouldn't be wanting to run a Wi-Fi hotspot or do anything else internet connected off it, because it becomes hard to keep it secure. But that said, there are lots of Android phones which are affordable. Some of the entry level Samsung smartphones are quite good. You can, you know, for £100, you don't even need to spend £100. You can go lower than that. And most phones, so. What you need to, there's two things you need to be aware of. You need to get a handset which supports the creation of a Wi-Fi hotspot, internet sharing. It's called different things by different manufacturers. But also, you need to make sure that the provider of the SIM card, i.e. the provider of the data, allows for that to happen. And there's two things. Sometimes they don't physically allow it to happen, and sometimes it works, but it's against their terms of service.
Is that common? Because I know people have talked about that, but I've never experienced it myself when I've travelled, that you can't use it. But is it common?
It can happen. So, the situation is slightly more complicated, because, Wasim, are you travelling in Europe, or are we talking about outside Europe?
No, I'm travelling to my ancestral homeland, which is Pakistan.
Okay, all right. Because
I think there's four LTE commonly available there.
Yeah, okay, so you got fast internet. The other option, Wasim, is not to use your mobile phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot, but to buy a device that's specifically designed to do just that. And they're generically known as MiFi units, you know, MiFi with an M. And they come in various shapes and sizes, but typically about the size of a bar of soap. Take a SIM card like a smartphone, and then create a Wi-Fi hotspots, a Wi-Fi field, if you like, that you can then typically log up to seven or so devices onto. And the benefit of doing that is because they're independently powered, they've got their own battery, they're not going to kill the battery on. Because one thing is, if you start using your smartphone as a Wi-Fi hotspot, it's going to kill the battery quite quickly. When I say kill it, I don't mean damage it, but it will need recharging, and it will run out well within the day. And if you're traveling, that's not an ideal situation. So using a sort of a MiFi type device might be a better solution for you. And those things can be bought for £50 or less in some cases. So that might be a better solution if you've already got a phone that you're happy with. The downside is that then you'd need one SIM card in there just for data, and another SIM card too, if you want to be able to use your phone as a phone whilst you're abroad as well. But it is tricky, outside the European Union, that is the way I would go. But don't buy an older smartphone. That's, in my view, it's a false economy.
Wasim, which part of Pakistan are you going to?
No, the problem is I've got family over there, so they will be using to contact me as well. Yeah. So I want to get a smartphone. So yeah. I'm more inclined to what you're saying, get a cheaper smartphone, budget one, up to date with the Android offer.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Wasim. I was just going to say, by all means, get a cheaper smartphone, a new one. Make sure it's capable of running the latest version of Android. And perhaps with that in mind, invest in a pocket-sized battery pack as well, which will allow you to top up your smartphone's battery You know, by so these devices, they come in various, again, various shapes and sizes, but again, they can be as small as a lipstick and, you know, go up to, they're typically about, again, the size of a bar of soap or so, but they can be bigger. And what you do is you charge up your phone when you're at home or near a power socket, you charge up this battery device as well, and then it allows you to charge up anything that connects to a USB cable. So that can be a tablet, a smartphone, a MiFi unit, it could be all sorts of devices can then be recharged. So one of those devices, so if you got one that was, say, 10,000 milliamp hour capacity, that might charge a smartphone three or four times over. And that's quite useful if you're not always near a main socket, if you're traveling, and particularly if you're using, you know, your phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot, that will be a good way of just keeping the battery up to snuff, as it were, till you can charge both again.
There we go. Hope that solved Wasim's problem there. Callum's got a good question, one I think that my son may be interested in, that about headphones. Callum, fire away.
Hi, morning, guys. My question is, are there any wireless headphones that have a similar sound performance as the Dr. Dre Beats series, but at a cheaper price?
I have to say that I'm not the greatest fan of the sound quality of the Dr. Dre Beats, but it's a matter of taste and what sort of music you like listening to. The Dr. Dre Beats series, which are now owned by Apple, as I'm sure you know, tend to be a little bit bass heavy. So it depends what you want. If you want to listen to music that's bass heavy, or if you want to listen to music in an environment that tends to wash away the bass. So, for example, if you try listening on the London Underground, it's very hard to pick up the bass on a set of headphones because it gets drowned out by the train noise. So, you know, just be aware that Dr. Dre Beats, you know, are good enough headphones, but they're not balanced across the frequency range. They're designed specifically to listen to certain types of music and less so for others. So that's one thing to bear in mind. I have used a pair that I and it is a very personal thing, but there's a pair of in-ear headphones called by a company called Soul Republic, or a brand called Soul Republic, S-O-L space Republic. I think, yes, the name is, the model is called Shadow, and these are in-ear headphones. They're just like earbuds. There's a yoke that goes around the back of the neck, and so the earbuds hang down on short wires. That uses Bluetooth, and it's rather good. So if you're interested in bass response, I mean, one of the ways to get better bass response is to use the buds, because the positioning of the bud within the ear can make a huge difference to the bass response. So if you're in a particular challenging environment, like on a train or something, just tweaking the bud in your ear slightly can bring that in. And it's to do with getting the right seal, you know, the seal between the bud and your ear, so that there's no gap. The better that seal, the better the bass response is going to be. Failing that, as a piece of general advice, I'd say if you're not going to use a bud, get ones that are called over the ear headphones. So not ones that sit on the ear, but ones that encompass the whole ear. That will help increase the bass response and quality. The other thing that I would say is, I mean, and this might not apply to you, but it might apply to some. Apple, who, as I say, own the Beats brand now, are doing a sort of back to school promotion. So on certain iPad and Mac purchases, if you're a student, if you buy a Mac, for example, at the moment, and you're a student or know someone who is a student, then you get a pair of free Beats headphones with it as well. So, you know, just in case you qualify for that.
Let's go to Ranjit in Birmingham, who's got a question for Fevzi.
Hello, Fevzi. I was thinking of buying a modest tablet that I would use only for banking purposes. Would I be absolutely safe if I did that? And I didn't go on any other websites except the banking websites that I planned on using.
Okay, so you're never absolutely safe, first thing to say. And wireless devices are in principle less safe than wired devices. So, you know, obviously what we're doing is it's always a thing, Ranjit, where we balance security against convenience. The more convenient something is, the less secure it tends to be. It would be very convenient not to have a password on our computer or any of the websites we access, but that would not be secure. So first of all, there's no complete security, but there are things that you need to be aware of. For example, I would try to avoid doing banking on a public Wi-Fi network. If I had to do banking or shopping on a public Wi-Fi network, then I would use a piece of software called a VPN. That stands for Virtual Private Network, which effectively, it's a technology that used to be used by business people when they were having to log on to their company mainframes. But nowadays, it's primarily used by consumers to try and stop themselves being snooped on. So how can this happen? If you're on a public Wi-Fi, let's say you're in a cafe or on a train with Wi-Fi, you're sharing that Wi-Fi network with everyone else that's on it. And without going into any great detail, it is very easy to get a piece of software that will sniff packets, as they call it. That's to say, just basically sample one by one all the packets of information flowing to and from your machine, including any passwords that you type in and anything else. What the VPN does is it creates, if you like, a tunnel between you and the website that you're accessing, whereby the information flows back and forth in that tunnel, but it's hard for anyone else, even on that Wi-Fi network, to look in. So although that's arguably still not as secure as a wired system using the same technology, it is a whole lot better. And I would say to you, without a VPN, do not do anything sensitive on a mobile device on a public Wi-Fi network, because it's really just, people don't realize it, but it's really asking for trouble. And it's very, as I say, I won't go into detail, it's very easy to do. I could easily interrogate your communications and then potentially the contents of your machine, sitting across the way from you, smiling at you in the cafe as I sip my cappuccino. And okay, you know, that's a problem. So be aware of that. Beyond that, you can run security software on tablets as well, but also be careful. You know, you can also be tricked by emails that come in that trick you into sharing certain information about yourself that again could put your banking or your shopping details at risk. So I don't know if that answers your question, Ranjit.
But the safest thing I could do would be, if I bought a tablet and didn't use it for anything else except banking, do it from home, and maybe rather than tablet, buy a cheap laptop and actually wire it up. That would make me safest. And
if
should I buy something that was an Android system or a Windows system?
So if you're looking at a desktop or a laptop computer, i.e. not a tablet, then I would go for a Windows-based machine, because you've got more choice, tends to be cheaper. If you've got the money, by all means, go to a Mac. Some people say that they're a little bit more secure. They are a little bit more secure, but only in the sense that there are fewer Macs out there, and therefore fewer people writing software to attack them. So in that sense, arguably more secure. If cost is a consideration, go for a basic laptop computer. It's easier to run a wired internet connection. You can do it from some tablets. Apple iPads are harder to wire to the internet, although that's now possible these days if you've got the right dongles and so forth. But a wired experience on a tablet is not great, because you've got a wire hanging off this handheld device. It's a bit clumsy, and it tends to dangle in an unattractive and impractical way. So if you're going to go for the wired connection, then that's better. And bear in mind, if it's a small enough laptop, you can still go wireless. This thing about not using it for anything else, it does have some benefits, but
is it worth it, Fevzi, for all that investment? If you follow the precautions you've spoken about, do you need to invest so much money in a device just to do one particular thing?
No, I don't think you do. And the other thing is I'd keep away from their apps as well, because there's a lot of fake apps out there as well. So I'd be accessing it via a browser, which I've done everything I can to secure. I think the VPN advice applies, you know, be it a laptop or a tablet or indeed a smartphone. But if you just want one thing, you know, a cheap tablet will do the trick. I would say...
But Ranjit's question shows the concern that people have nowadays.
Yeah, and it's legitimate concern. Because with the advent of online banking, banks have somewhat shifted the onus of responsibility. So when we dealt with sort of checkbooks and so forth, the fraud guarantees were more robust. Nowadays, there are caveats in the fraud guarantees that say if they feel we didn't keep our system up to date, you know, in terms of security, if we were running an insecure operating system or didn't have a proper antivirus or weren't running the application that they offer to you for free and you didn't go for, you know, or you've been careless with passwords and so forth, any of those things could lead to them trying to wriggle out of their obligation to you should you be a victim of fraud. So do be careful. Okay. Whatever system you use, keep it up to date and well secured.
Ravzi, thank you very much as always. And of course, you can get in touch with Fevzi at www.gadgetdetective.com, or you can just find him out on social media using the term Gadget Detective. He will be there to answer all of your questions.
The At Home with Colin Murray podcast.
Hello, I'm Colin Murray, and in this Five Live podcast, I'm either going to be opening up my door or going round to the houses of a famous name in sport. I'm kind of hoping that the relaxed environment's going to loosen things up a little, and by the end of each episode, we'll have a real insight into the character of each interviewee.
At Home with Colin Murray. Download and subscribe to the podcast using your usual podcast app or at bbc.co.uk/5live.